7 minutes after 10 o'clock. And I am in Studio A here at WMUK with a room filled with actors and producers. It's so nice to have the cast and Deputy Director of Farmer's Alley here to talk about Peter and the Starcatcher. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Kara. Always a pleasure.
Well, Rob, as deputy director, I'm sure you have a lot to say about Peter and the Starcatcher, especially coming up with putting it on the season in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, what's unique about Peter and the Starcatcher wholly is the way that it's staged. And I saw it, the tour came through Western Michigan a few years ago, and I was simply enchanted by it. And I knew just the structure of the storytelling and the heart of the play was something that I knew that we wanted to produce at Farmer's Alley Theater. I believe Deneen and Jeremy might have seen it in New York as well. So certainly on our radar. And when the rights became available, I mean, it's been very, very popular. Regional theaters all over the country are doing it. And so we're super excited to be one of the first in Michigan to produce Peter and the Starcatcher. And what's supremely unique about it is that our fabulous director, Stephen Brodebeck, who is a WMU alum, worked on the Broadway 5-time Tony winning production in New York. He was the movement associate. Basically, he was took the choreography that was put in place and made sure that the actors kept up their reps and everything looked clean and smooth and precise as it should be throughout the run of the show. And that was a tremendous learning experience for him. And for we've had this relationship with Stephen for several years now. He directed our productions of the I Love a Piano, which was the Irving Berlin review, and The World Goes Round, which was the Cantor and Ebb review. Last year, he staged our smash hit production of Spamalot. And this summer, we've actually reunited many of those actors from Monty Python's Spamalot to return for Peter and the Starcatcher. So his vision and insight into the show has just been immeasurably useful. For your listeners who don't know what Peter and the Starcatcher is, it's based on a series of books, I believe, and adapted for the stage. It's sort of a Peter Pan prequel, if you will. We get to see these characters who would become Peter Pan or Captain Hook and Smee. And during the course of the show, there are many references to the Peter Pan story. We get to see how Peter Pan learns how to fly, how Captain Hook lost his hand. So many wonderful, enchanting moments that way. But the language is such poetry. There's so much puns and turns of phrase and modern day cultural references. It's very fast paced, quick. It's 12 actors. And I tell you, I watched rehearsal last evening, and 2 hours, they are fully committed mentally, physically, spiritually, probably they're praying backstage, but it truly is an ensemble piece. And I know that Harrison and Courtney will speak to that. But ultimately, it's for anyone who has dreamed, who's imagined they could fly. There's lots of talk about heroes and what it means and sort of discovering first love and friendship and bonds like that. It's also just flat out hilarious, and the actors that we have on stage are working their tails off, and to put this production, I know that Kalamazoo is going to flip for it.
Peter Pan, the story, is something we all grow up with. It's sort of like Greek myth to us, so it's neat to take a fresh perspective and look at that.
Exactly, and I mean, and we were talking with the cast about this throughout the process. You know, Peter Pan, the story is over 100 years old at this point. Why is it so popular? And, you know, all these different adaptations from, you know, the cartoons to the musical to, you know, something like the movie Hook to, you know, Pan, that Hugh Jackman flop of a movie, to all these other different Finding Neverland, you know, the story about Jay and Barry, and then this, they're all unique in their own way, but something that resonates with everyone is that childlike wonder and never wanting to grow up. So bringing in adults and kids to the theater, you know, it's kind of like a Pixar movie, like something like Inside Out, where the kids will get it on one level, but the parents get it on another level wholly. And so I think both young and old certainly will be entertained by Peter and the Starcatcher.
I saw that you are advising or guiding parents who are interested in this production to maybe bring kids who are 10 years old or a bit or older to this? Young kids may lose a little bit of what's going on.
Well, I'm not sure how many children know who Ayn Rand is, so there's references to that. But, you know, it's been interesting to market this show because one of the taglines of it is it's the grown-up prequel to Peter Pan. So then we have folks calling saying, oh, is it adult in nature? Is there, you know, sexual references? Is this adult? You know, is this the blue version of Peter Pan or is there language? There's certainly nothing at all objectionable in the material. I mean, unless you consider swashbuckling and sword fighting with a plunger in your hand objectionable.
but there is an occasional fart joke.
Right.
I'm just gonna throw that out there. Okay.
So that will certainly appeal to the 10-year-olds. But it's not a kid's show at all, per se. It's, in, like I said, the language that the actors speak, the writing is so unique and so smart and clever that some of those, you know, things might go over their head. But when you have pirates and mermaids and mollusks and shipwrecks and flying, you know, I think the kids will be entertained by that as well. And I think parents probably can decide, sort of may depend child by child, who would be right for it and who wouldn't.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that rehearsals are going swimmingly because there's actually still another week before it opens.
Yeah, that's right. We open on Friday, July the 21st, and we run for 3 solid weekends through August the 6th. And ticket information can be found at our website, FarmersAlleyTheater.com, or finding Farmers Alley Theater on Facebook as well. And trust me, these actors will use every single minute and hour of rehearsal up until the 21st because, like I said, it's 12 actors. But what's so unique is they're narrating the story, and then they're becoming part of the story. And then they go back to narrating the story, and then they become a different character over here. And the way that the lights are used to infer different locations, the way simple props like chairs and ropes and crates are used inventively is very, very clever. And so they are working. There's no lead. There's no smallest part. Everyone is completely an ensemble and could not function without every single other person in the theater doing their job. And that's what makes it different and completely challenging for the actors, because you're only as good, I'm sure these guys will tell you, as your weakest link. And right now, I think they're moving as a cohesive unit very, very strongly and making it the best it can be.
Again, Peter and the Starcatcher is a newer show, a huge hit on Broadway a few years ago. It won 5 Tonys, started off Broadway. But I wonder if the chatter began among the acting community about the opportunities in this show, because it relies so much on the people in the show. You're not disguised by lots of costumes and props and moving parts. It's all you creating everything. So tell me about Harrison. I know you kind of grew up in Brooklyn and only graduated in 2014 from Boston University. And you've been working hard ever since, including in a production here for Farmer's Alley. Harrison, tell me about hearing rumors about Peter and the Starcatcher.
It's sort of a grassroots actor approach. I almost imagined when I saw it that we were living in a world where there was just like less materials, there was less technology, and we had to go back to our origins of storytelling as like cavemen, right? Where we didn't have the hydraulics on the stage moving things, that it was like people moving objects to tell a story. And when I think about my acting training and finding more of myself within myself to then share, like, this is the kind of play that allows for that training to really come into practice. Because, like you said, it's like we only have ourselves and our scene partners to tell this story. And what a glorious challenge to trust myself and my castmates in order to tell that story effectively.
Does it require more rehearsal to pull this one off?
Well, if they'd give us more rehearsal, we'd take it. But there's also the fun in knowing, oh, we only have, 2.5 weeks maybe to put this up. So every minute of those rehearsals has to be about forwarding the process and enjoying the process, because if I'm not having fun as Peter Pan, then I'm not doing the job, So it's fun to have less time almost.
Courtney, what can you add to your approach to this piece and maybe what you're excited about?
Yeah, I think it's been challenging from day one. So I think that's one of the most exciting things, is that we really hit the ground running. And having to trust everyone else on stage is a huge, it's a great challenge, but it's also just so much fun.
Because you don't even know them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, everyone was totally new to me. So it's been fun to get to know everybody, but also to work on the show and develop our characters and our parts together, and everyone's so great. It feels like we're just playing, and I feel like I'm reminded so many times in rehearsal of when I was younger playing dress up with my little sisters down in the basement, and having to find weird things around the house to be the things that we have to use. And I just get reminded of that so many times, because we use weird things, we use rubber gloves for birds, and it's just having to use your imagination in a way that you don't in other types of theater.
That's another reason why it was so incredibly beneficial for us to have, one, Stephen as our director, who has this vision wholly, and then two, all these actors, a lot of them had worked together before. I think half a dozen of them or so were in Spamalot. So they already sort of have a lot of that comedic, timing and chemistry with each other. And then when we add in talented actors like Harrison and Cordy and Chris Matzos, who plays our Black Stash, who's sort of the Captain Hook facsimile, it just raises the bar that much.
So the cast has been bonding for a couple of weeks. The production is, in a way, bare bones, but it's also fascinating because we get to see how theater is created right in front of us. I would like to hear a little more about this story and really your characters, and maybe we'll start with the one I'm least familiar with, and that would be your character, Courtney. You play Molly.
Yeah.
And what does she exist for in this piece?
So Molly is a girl who, she's 13 years old, and she's not really going to let anyone get in her way of what she wants to do. And she's very loyal, and she's determined. She's kind of the Wendy character pre-Wendy. I don't know if this is a spoiler alert, but she's Wendy's mom is what you find out at the end. So
that's definitely a spoiler.
I love when people are like, spoiler alert, and I'm just
gonna let you know. she's very opinionated and strong-willed, and she's very smart, very intelligent, and she relies on that a lot. But then it's this beautiful transformation of, I think she learns and kind of figures out her emotions and what love is, and that there's more than just knowing the right answer, and the whole feelings and emotional and almost soulful, spiritual side of a person. And so I think that's a beautiful transition that you get to see her kind of go through throughout the show.
13-year-old Molly.
Yeah. So I mean, as far as getting down to some of the plot of it, there's two ships, and our character Boy, who Harrison plays, he doesn't have a name because he's grown up in an orphanage, never had a mother or father. I believe at the cruel school where he's raised, they call him Mule. And he's on this ship with Molly. And Molly's father, Lord Astor, is one of six star catchers. And Molly's a star catcher apprentice, and she has the star stuff, which is sort of a pixie dust type of situation. And there's this trunk full of star stuff that we think is on her dad's ship, but actually ends up being on her and the boy's ship. Mm-hmm. And there's pirates that come to steal the star stuff, and Molly and the boy have to make sure that the star stuff doesn't get in the way. The name of the ship is called the Neverland. They crash land on this island, and magic ensues, and will, the pirates get the star stuff, and will Boy and Molly save the day? And there's this sort of rivalry at first between the two of them, which turns into this sort of friendship slash romantic-y type thing, which is very beautiful to see unfold.
Who wrote this play?
Rick Ellis is his name, and it's, like I said, from the book by Dave Barry and maybe another.
Ridley Pearson,
yeah. And so it's, you know, if you know Dave Barry, the columnist, you know his humor.
Oh, that is the same Dave Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it's just, it's not like anything I've ever seen before. And which just, how rare is that in theater nowadays where you are, like they said, really thrown back into this let's put on a play type persona. And what you have, the familiar characters and all the little secrets and in-jokes of Peter Pan that we're all so familiar with it. It just makes for a lot of fun.
It's amazingly balanced between like beautiful, subtle nuance and extreme over-the-top slapstick. It does it more successfully than maybe any other play I've seen.
It also exists in a strange world in between straight play and musical, because the characters break into song from time to time.
Because of course they do.
Has a very like 1940s like radio play style. Like there's lots of sound effects. It's just we have our music director Lori Hatfield. She's on the keyboards, and we have a percussionist Andy Niblow, and they provide all like the sound effects and the magic stuff. And you know when you know doors creak open or not, when there's lightning and thunder and the storm goes on. So it's very old school in that way as well.
Well, here's a heartfelt song from an album that came out 10 years ago called Rogues Gallery. Richard Thompson, the great folk artist, singing a sailing song called Mingalay Boat Song. And that'll stand in today for our musical selections. And we'll be right back with Deputy Director Rob Weiner of Farmers Alley Theater and Harrison Bryan and Courtney Martin, who are starring as Peter and Molly. The show starts on the 21st, that's next Friday, and you can find out all the details at farmersalleytheater.com.
If the hoboys let them go, boys, heave a head round into the weather. If the hoboys let them go, boys, say, to mingle.
The Mingalay Boat Song, sung by Richard Thompson from the album Rogues Gallery. And I'm sitting here with some rogues actors. They are from the cast of Peter and the Starcatcher, which starts at Farmers Alley Theater on Friday, the 21st of July, continuing 3 weekends in a row through August 6th, and details are at farmersalleytheater.com. Here in the studio, Harrison Bryan, who plays Peter, as well as Courtney Martin. And Courtney, since you're the newest person to be here with me, I haven't spoken to you before. Tell me a little about your theater background and where you got into it.
Yeah, of course. So I started doing theater when I was in third grade, when I was attending school. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, so I'm a Michigan native, and I did Hansel and Gretel. And then I started doing some church productions, and my parents started homeschooling me and my two younger sisters when I was in fourth grade. And so thank goodness that West Michigan has a great homeschool community, because there's a theater group called Homeschool Performing Arts, which is where I did a lot of my theater work pre-high school. And so I did a bunch of shows with them, and you know, it was like a hobby, and I just kind of enjoyed it. And then once I got into high school, I was like, man, I really enjoy this. And I started thinking about, you know, what it would be like, what it would look like to pursue it as a career. And then I got involved with Grand Rapids Civic Theater in my junior year of high school. So it took me a while to get involved with community theater, but I did that. And I ended up interning for the artistic director of Civic Theater. And then I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. And so I did a bunch of college auditions, and I go to school at Ball State University down in Muncie, Indiana. And I'm going to be going into my senior year in the fall.
Wow, so you are still an undergraduate.
Yep.
Well, and how did you end up getting cast? Did you audition online or in person?
In person. So the auditions were in December. So it was about a week into my Christmas break at school. And I had been talking to a friend at school, and he told me about the audition. And I was like, man, I really want to try out for the show. And then I ended up calling, and they didn't have any more audition slots. And I was like, man, I really want to be, I was like, can I sit at the audition? I'll sit there the whole time. And if you have like an extra second or two, I'll just go in and do an audition. And so then a couple days before the actual audition, they ended up calling me again and saying that they had extended another hour of the audition. And so I went in and auditioned, and then they ended up doing callbacks. But I was in, they did callbacks at the end of January, and I was in another show, so I wasn't able to make it back to Kalamazoo, so I just
can't ditch a show just to come an audition.
Yeah, it was our tech weekend too, so I tried to get out of it, but they wouldn't let me. So I sent in a video of the sides that they provided, and then I think a week or two later, I got the call from Jeremy, and I was beyond thrilled.
So let that be a lesson to you: the squeaky wheel gets the oil, you know. And I know your radio listeners can't see Courtney right now, but she looks like a fairy princess, and that's helpful as well. But I love the character of Molly. You know, I've got two little girls myself, and I can imagine them growing up and being this strong, you know, sort of like independent. She's the leader. She doesn't need a boy to tell her what to do. She's a girl, and she can take charge, and she's the smartest one of all the kids in the show, and the kids in air quotes. So it's just a tremendous character, and Courtney's really superbly strong actress, and we're very, very pleased and lucky to have her in the show.
What I think I'm looking forward to seeing in the show, or maybe develop, is that not everybody in the show really likes your character. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I've seen a few clips online, and the actress is who plays Molly in those clips, you know, really standing up for herself and kind of bossy too.
Yeah, a very, very bossy, which is actually kind of fun because I was a very bossy kid when I was little. So I really get to get back to my roots.
Yeah, her two sisters told us about that.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, but I mean, you know, I think with that, you know, of course, there comes the competition. There's another one of the lost boys in the show, Prentice. He also wants to be the leader. And so there's a lot of competition between that. But Molly doesn't really let it affect her. You know, she just kind of pushes him to the side and continues to lead them fearlessly through their adventures.
Well, here's the part I've been waiting for. I guess you guys are prepared to give us a little taste of the dialogue, and we'd really like to hear it. As this whole piece is so word, it's in love with words and phrases and interaction between people throughout the piece. So while you guys are queuing up the pages, maybe Rob can introduce this.
Well, yeah, I was going to say there's a setup to it, and Molly has this locket around her neck full of this star stuff. And is this what we're doing here? Mm-hmm. And so she's teaching Peter about the magic of the star stuff and why it's so important.
And as you said before, this is the main thing people are after.
Yes, this is what the pirate...
The motivation's
the
here.
The dastardly pirate Black Stash and his first mate Smee are after this. And Black Stash does have both use of his hands throughout most of the show. I won't give away the spoiler right there.
Hey, you only get one spoiler.
Okay, well, begin.
Don't let me down, daughter. This is your mission now.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Caw-caw, caw-caw.
What are you doing?
Sorry, what? Get below, boy. If Slank sees you on deck, he'll rear up.
You were talking to your neck thing.
No, I wasn't.
I know what I saw.
Well, there was a porpoise swimming alongside the ship, and it was making those funny noises that porpoises make, and I thought I'd make some funny noises too. That's all.
So you were talking to a fish?
Porpoises are not fish. They're mammals, like you. Are Germans.
Then how come your neck thing glows and rings all by itself?
It's for swimming. I'm a good swimmer. It's a
right,
swimming metal.
Swimming, sure. And what's star stuff?
Decision. I'm going to trust you.
Why? I'm just a boy.
I know. Pity. You like to look at the stars. Well, there they are.
There's so many.
They look safe, don't they? Sparkling up there like diamonds.
I like when they shoot across the sky. Phew.
Sometimes pieces of them fall to earth, little bits that look like sand. Can you keep a secret?
I can.
Those little bits are star stuff. The trunk in Slink's cabin is full of it. There's some in here, too, in case I'm ever in trouble.
Star stuff? Let me see.
No! It changes people if they touch it.
How?
Different ways, depending on what they want to be.
So, if somebody gets their hands on the star stuff and...
And they're evil and greedy like Genghis Khan, or they're hungry for world domination like Caesar or Napoleon, or, you know, Ayn Rand.
Who's that?
Ugh, didn't you learn anything at that orphanage?
I was kind of busy trying not to die.
Oh.
So star stuff's so dangerous, why are you after it?
I'm a star catcher. We have special powers we use in secret to keep star stuff away from tyrants who try to rule the world.
You mean like Queen Victoria?
God save her, and no! She doesn't need star stuff to rule the world, she's British.
So, you're a... what is it?
A star catcher. There's only 6.5 of us on the planet.
6.5?
I'm still an apprentice.
Okay. So prove it.
What?
Go on. Amaze me with your special powers.
It's not a magic show. I'm not like some magician guy.
Well, I mean, if you can't actually do anything...
Fine. Whatever. To have faith is to have wings.
And scene.
That's fantastic. You guys, thank you so much. Bravo. Bravo. So we're getting... That's getting to the heart of this play and what it's about. And...
That's about the play in about 2 minutes.
I would like to give you guys another break. Let's listen to a pirate song called The Turkish Revelry. Again, Farmers Alley Theater presents Peter and the Starcatcher beginning a week from tomorrow. That would be the 21st of July through August 6th. Details at farmersalleytheater.com. I'm with Harrison Bryan, Courtney Martin, and Rob Weiner.
There was a little ship, and she sailed on the sea, and the name of the ship was the Turkish Reveille. Ah, she sailed down in that lonely, lonesome water. Ah, she sailed on the lonesome sea. Up stepped a little sailor, saying, "What'll you give to me to sink that ship to the bottom of the sea?" He bowed on his breast and downward sunk he, a bidding a farewell to the golden willow tree. Oh, he sunk in that lonely, lonesome water. Oh, he sunk in the lonely sea.
That's the tune Turkish Revelry from Rogues Gallery, the album that was Loudon Wainwright III. And we're visiting with two cast members who play Peter and Molly from Peter and the Starcatcher, which begins next Friday at the Farmers Alley Theater. I'm also here with Rob Weiner, deputy director and one of the founders of the theater. Harrison Bryan, let's hear a little about... your thoughts on your character Peter, who we were just saying during the music, it's a little hard to know whether you're supposed to be happy for this boy who never grows up, or whether that choice was a good one or not.
If it's even a choice at all. I mean, one of the burdens of being a human being is that we grow up, and one of the most magical, beautiful parts about Peter Pan is that he doesn't. And at the beginning of this story, I'm just like everyone else. I'm just a person with insecurities and fears and doubts and with nobody to love me, no family. And he really fills that orphan trope very well. And... what does he want? I mean, he wants this feeling of family and belonging and love and care that every child deserves. And he gets it through a way that he could never imagine, through this island, this magical island, through this ability to fly. He gains this feeling of being alive. And that's wonderful for him. But I'm putting adults in air quotes as I talk about myself, but as an adult person that I am, there's this dramatic irony of he maybe gets to stay a kid forever, but I, as an actor, know that I'm gonna grow up. Like, my Peter Pan will only exist in this moment for me in this world. And, you know, that's why I'm trying to just take every second of this and hold on to my childhood for everything it's worth, you know, and never let go. And I think we all have an element of that, but we can't stop time. And time is going to always be moving forward, even if our hearts and imaginations stay as a child. And that's why I think we love Peter Pan and why I think I'm in love with this story.
Mm. Peter Pan is incredibly bittersweet. I mean, really in all of its forms, you know, when Wendy has to go back home and, you know, he goes back to Neverland, that's always sort of this sad moment. And when you look at a story like Hook, or, you know, the Robin Williams film that sort of tackles what if Peter Pan grows up, and then something like this story where, you know, he thinks he doesn't want to grow up, and then he forms this bond with Molly, and then all he wants to do in the world is to stay with her. It's incredibly heartbreaking. And that's what's so beautiful and wonderful about the show, is that it has all this fun, humorous, slapstick stuff that you are just going to roar in the aisles about. And then you have this amazing heart, which is really embodied in these two actors next to me. And I remember seeing it on Broadway, and I mean, on Broadway when the tour came through here at Miller. And I would recommend bringing a Kleenex or two into the theater by the end of the show. But ultimately, it's a story about, you know, hope and learning what it is to grow up, even though Peter himself won't.
Mm-hmm. You have the enchantment of the story you loved as a child, but then there are these questions that can't be answered that will make you try again, I think, when you're watching this unfold.
There's an annotated script we've been looking at throughout the process of the show, and one of the playwrights in the script on the side says something about how Peter Pan is this story about a boy who never grows up. But for Peter and the Starcatcher, he wrote it from this perspective of this realization that he had of as a man who has grown up. So that, like, that difference in how, you know, what do you miss out on when you grow up, and what are you... You know, what do you not get when you don't grow up?
Well, let's hear a little about the rest of the cast. Is it 12?
Yes, there's 12 actors, and amongst the 12 of them, they play over 50 different characters and are basically moving every single piece of scenery, prop, etc. They're playing animals, they're playing half men, half fish, half women, half mollusks, creatures, but luckily we've, aside from Harrison and Courtney, assembled a wonderful cast. And one of the other through lines is, what is a hero without a villain? And in this story, the villain is played by an actor named Christopher Matsos, who plays Black Stash. And his name, you know, strikes fear into the hearts of men. He's got this comically huge, what does he call it in the show? Flavor saver, something like that. But there's so many ways that he describes his mustache throughout the show. And what's wonderful about Chris's performance is he's so, like, dry and has these facial expressions and really chews on the scenery. And he mentions that throughout the show.
Cookie duster.
It's cookie duster.
Celebrated mouth brow.
And that's the kind of poetry, and he fancies himself a poet within the show. And what's wonderful about Chris and Black Stash is he's got his Smee, and that's played by Rod Cohn. And Farmer's Alley audiences will recognize Rod. He was Sir Robin in last year's Spamlot. He also was in the Trailer Park Christmas musical a couple summers ago. He's hilarious. I mean, if you talk to him on the street, and the comic timing that Chris and Rod have is really impeccable.
Mm-hmm. They also have nose brush, face foliage, and the lawn on the lip.
the one on the left. That's good. And so aside from Chris and Rod, we also have, let's see here, Kendall Van Amberg and Joey Retta, who are playing these other boys, these other orphan boys. They're both Western students or recent Western graduates. Brad Power, Michael P. Martin, Otis Kleinberg, Dwight Trice, Michael Perlongo, Stephen Gray. A lot of those guys were in Spamalot last year, and they're playing pirate captains and evil island dwellers and nannies and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because they play everything.
Yeah. We all play the infamous crocodile as well. Mm-hmm. There is a crocodile in this show.
There's a physical element as well. You were saying during the music that in order to make some characters fly, your own, you know, thighs and biceps need to be put to use.
Well,
Harrison, yeah, everyone's got to carry them.
The kind folks at Farmer's Alley gave me a gym membership that I'd love to share with the rest of the cast. Yeah, there's a lot of lifts, a lot of gymnastics, and almost acrobatic talents that are required. There's running, there's leaping, there's falling, there's stage combat. My body is constantly sore.
I keep contrasting that with, say, you go back home and get cast in a show, and basically all you have to do is just stay out of the way of all of the tech grips and then lift an eyebrow in one scene or something like that, and that's all that.
Yeah,
you're just more of a prop.
Imagine those lucky people in film who have body doubles. I mean, oh my goodness, what I wouldn't do for a body double.
Well, after this show, the next show you'll be a physical snap. I mean,
right.
You should be all right.
Everything will be easier.
It's quite the workout. We're getting near the end of the hour. I want to remind listeners that Peter and the Starcatcher again starts a week from tomorrow at Farmers Alley Theater. And the production is at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive. That is the home away from home for Farmers Alley. Is there any news on that front?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you come down Farmers Alley, I believe actually this weekend, I think they're paving the street finally.
Woo!
So the schedule is to be finished in August. So we're crossing our fingers and holding our breath on that, because you know how construction in the state of Michigan goes. But after that, we're really excited for season number 10, if you can believe it, which is going to start in the fall. And we're actually going to be utilizing both spaces, the Little Theater on Oakland Drive and our home base, our intimate black box at 221 Farmer's Alley. So we're opening next season with the grand musical Gypsy. And that is, we're so excited, going to be performed over at the Little Theater still on Oakland Drive. And then we're going to return in November for our first show back home. And we're performing The Diary of Anne Frank, the new adaptation. And we're so thrilled about that. And then throughout the season, we're going to be sort of ping-ponging back and forth some of the smaller, more intimate shows downtown, and then some of our larger shows at the Little Theater. And like, we're closing with the Producers next summer. So we said, hey, if we could do Spamalot, we could do the Producers, right? So
you've really made it work.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure you were thinking at the time, who knows if people will follow us to the Little Theater.
Yeah, so educating our audience base has been a huge process for us.
Yeah.
And luckily, I don't think there's been too many people who have come to one and the show has been over at the other. It's happened a couple times, but luckily they've been able to get over to the show in time. But it's been a real win-win situation for us, because it's allowed us to put on some of these bigger, grander shows that we wouldn't have been able to do in the black box. Now, Peter and the Starcatcher certainly can work in a black box, because it is so creative in how you can make the set design or the prop design or the staging of the show. But it works beautifully over at the Little Theater as well.
Harrison, did you have something to add earlier?
Yeah, I just want to... There's a little preface that the playwright put into the script, and I'd love to just read it for you.
Let's hear it.
These dozen actors would play everyone and everything. Sailors, pirates, orphans, natives, fish, mermaids, birds, even doors, passageways, masts, storms, jungles. They would also narrate action and memory, giving each of them a privileged relationship with the audience. This would encourage the audience to be more than spectators. It would invite them to play along, to participate, to imagine.
And that's what you get out of the show as an audience member. You have to fill in all those details with the help of the actors.
It really is a magical experience. We talk about the relationship with the actors and the audience, and the energy that they feed off one another. And this show fits that to a T.
Well, you know, when people are asked to give more, to connect more, they generally do. And that's what you're asking by keeping a lot of the frills off stage. I just had a quick thought pop in my head that we do have an improvisatory theater based in Kalamazoo, like called Crawl Space Eviction. And I thought I wondered if there's a parallel link here of this improvisational, like they often do things on the fly.
Absolutely.
This sort of comes from a tradition like that as well.
You know, I'm not sure about that. I'm sure that in the process of making the show and how that, you know, in New York, I'm sure it was very improvisational. But I know that these guys will tell you now that it is
really
biro
exact.
And like militaristic as far as who's carrying what prop and who's got Harrison's left ankle in this spot. And if, like I said before, if you're only as strong as your weakest link, and so if all 12 aren't working in harmony, it really...
I'd say one of the greatest gifts of the show is knowing that everything is so specific and purposely included in this script, but as the actor to create it for the first time every night for the audience and give it that improv feeling, that's a spectacular challenge.
Wow. Well, that's it for this hour here on WMUK. I want to thank you, Harrison Bryan and Courtney Martin and Rob Weiner, for joining me today. Peter and the Starcatcher starts a week from tomorrow at Farmers Alley Theater at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive. All the details online at farmersalleytheater.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll go out with actor John C. Reilly singing Fathom the Bowl.
Bold arrows, give an ear to me song. We'll sing in the praise of good brandy and rum. It's a clear crystal fountain near Ireland doth roll. Give me